Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back. Hey Dad, how you doing?
Hey Tay, doing good. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. We're recording this on May the 4th.
May the 4th be with you.
Nerd holiday. Of course, tomorrow you've got Cinco de Mayo. So I guess if you could start making some drinks for Star Wars and just slip on into some margaritas, you got 2 days in a row that you can justify drinking.
That's right.
If you're a big old nerd.
Yeah, I had Cooper at library class today, and they all celebrated Cinco de Mayo. And I asked them, I said, we're going to have baby margaritas. And they just looked at me blankly. They did not think that was funny.
Well, you know, there is historical reasons to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. It's not just about margaritas. But.
Well, they did dance around a sombrero and sing, today is Cinco de Mayo, ole, ole, ole.
Okay, all right. Well, there's some education with that, hopefully. But
and she told him, to her credit, she told him about a very important war. I mean, these were 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. But she told him there was a very important war that was fought between the Mexicans and the French, and, you know, that is very important in their history.
Well, that's all right. Well, and you know, if you're not fully informed on the history of Cinco de Mayo, as we mentioned before, we did an episode last year, so you can check that out.
Yeah.
All about it. But, you know, last week on the show, we talked all about orange liqueur, a vital ingredient for your margaritas if you're celebrating tomorrow.
That's right.
Curacao, Triple Sec, Cointreau, Grand Marnier, all of that we clarified to the best of our abilities last week. But one drink that came up a few times in discussion was the sidecar.
The old sidecar.
Yeah, which makes sense. It's a when you think of drinks that you make with orange liqueur, it's one of the first ones you think of. It's a very old school traditional cocktail. Usually cognac or brandy, lemon juice, some sort of orange liqueur, shaken, and then usually served with a sugar ream. You don't always see the sugar on it, but we'll get into why it's kind of an important part. And it's a classic example of a daisy build. Now, when we say daisy build, we mean a drink composed of a base spirit, citrus, and the sweet comes from a liqueur. Proportions usually somewhere around that 2-1-1 or 2 3/4 3/4 style that we're used to. If this sounds similar to a sour to you, well, that makes sense. The only big difference between a sour and a daisy is just that in a sour, the sweet comes from a sugar, and in a daisy, the sweet comes from a liqueur. And of course, this is where we get the margarita. Margarita is a classic daisy. That is that tequila, lime is your citrus, and then your sweet is Triple Sec or Cointreau. In fact, the history of the margarita is often contributed to the sidecar, or more so that Americans fleeing Prohibition and going south of the border would order sidecars, and bartenders kind of working with what they had would sub tequila in for the cognac, lime in for the lemon, salt for the sugar, and you'd get a margarita. That's makes sense because a margarita is Spanish for daisy. So it's all interrelated.
There you go. It's a tart sidecar.
Yeah. So that's like, before we get too much more though into the history of the sidecar, which was sort of what I wanted to talk about this week. It reminded me, I think, of a bit more of an unknown cocktail, sort of a lost cocktail. But the genetic precursor to the sidecar, which is the Brandy Cresta. Have you ever heard of a Brandy Cresta, Dad?
I had not until I was preparing for this episode, a Brandy Cresta. And I thought, what a terrible name to
you don't
hang
like
on
the
a
name,
drink.
Right?
No, a Brandy Cresta. That does not sound appetizing.
What about the name do you not like?
Cresta. It sounds like it's been sitting around and stuff built up on the glass or something like that. You know,
crusty brandy.
Yeah, get that crusty brandy. I have a brandy crusta.
Well, the crusta part of the name, obviously, brandy refers to the fact that it traditionally involves brandy. The crusta part, it refers to the way that the drink is usually presented, which is a thick sugar rim around the outside. So a crust of sugar around the outside of the glass. So not because we leave it sitting around. It's just in reference to the garnish.
Well, now see, that sounds better. It's a nice sugar coated rim. You know, that sounds a lot better than crusta. Get me the crusty glass.
It's a crust of sugar. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I have to think about that, but it seems like we could have called it something better.
Well, all right. Well, the crusta part, the sugar rim, was a pretty important part of the drink's preparation. And, you know, where we first see this drink referenced and written about, we're kind of going back to a place we just got back from here, but we're going back. It comes to us from New Orleans.
We've got quite a few coming from New Orleans.
Like I said, New Orleans, I think, outclasses any other city as far as how many drinks are proven to originate there. It specifically was the invention of an Italian immigrant bartender by the name of Joseph Santini. He worked at the bar, the Jewel of the South, around the 1850s. The crusta, like many drinks at the time, was originally sort of base independent. Like when I say that, I mean it could have been a whiskey crusta, a brandy crusta, a rum crusta. It really just means I want a base spirit prepared this way, crusta style, if you will. Just brandy was the one by far that caught on in popularity. And as I mentioned, it referenced that, you know, you'd always rim the glass. The iconic way of presenting crusta was this thick sugar, super fine sugar rim on it. And then usually also you would have a full peel of lemon around the inside of that glass. So it'd be like in a wine glass, and you would take a whole twist off a lemon and then circle the glass with it. So it's a very sort of flamboyant presentation of a drink, which Santini was sort of known for. He was a very flamboyant, stylish bartender.
And the crusted sugar around there was because it was such a dry drink, because you don't really add a sugar to it. So that's your sweetness coming off the rim as opposed to being mixed in there somewhere.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, the original crusta, to compare it to a sidecar now, a sidecar is still a pretty dry drink, but in its origin, it was a lot closer to how drinks were made at the time. You know, we're talking like the era of like the old fashions. You took a base spirit and you just lightly modified it. You just added a few little bells and whistles, dashes and dots to it, and then you were just more or less drinking a spirit. The original recipe reads as like a wine glass of brandy, so 2 ounces probably of hard spirit, a couple dashes of curacao, so really just dashes, just, you know, like a quarter teaspoon maybe, a few dashes of gum syrup, that would have been like a simple, and then just another dash of lemon juice. So a very small pour of citrus in this, a little bit of bitters, and then that lemon peel and that sugar, and it would have been stirred. So it's a lot closer to like when we think of how we prepare an old fashioned. Your bulk of liquid is the spirit, and then you're just modifying it with a few other ingredients, just small proportions.
I think I would have called it a brandy crown. If the crown being nice, the sugar rim around the top, it's a crown of sugar. That sounds a little more appetizing than a brandy crusta.
All right. Well, this is what he chose to call it. And it was, as much as it sounds sort of within that category of familiar drinks, at the time, it was very revolutionary for what he was doing, specifically adding that little bit of citrus. You know, citrus in cocktails was not unheard of, but it was usually associated with large format punches. Like a preserved punch would have citrus in it, but cocktails were more like the idea of a single serving glass that I'm going to serve you did not have citrus in it. He really took advantage of the time. This is when where commercial ice is more readily available. So he's taking advantage of that. He's using more like perishable ingredients and making that standalone, a single glass of something with citrus in it versus, you know, here's a punch that we've had sort of fortified on the back bar for a while. Mm-hmm. So that really is the sort of thing that sets it apart as revolutionary, is that just tiny inclusion of fresh citrus. Still a big deal. Big for setting the groundwork of drinks to come.
Well, not that this has anything to do with what we're talking about right now with the Brandy Cresta, but when you talk about punch and the fruit being in it, I couldn't help but think about Mom's mule punch that she made for Riley's graduation party. And there were sliced limes in there, and it had a mule punch. It looked like a margarita type drink. And you couldn't really taste the alcohol, but buddy, there was a whole fifth of vodka in there it ended up being. And it got drank, the whole big thing got drank, and then half of another one. We only had enough to make another half, and everybody was wanting it. And I'm not even sure that the kids didn't get some of that instead of the pitcher of lemonade that was on the other end of the bar. So,
oh, no, that's not good. Be safe. But, be careful with that.
But Mom's Mule Punch was a big hit of Riley's graduation party.
Well, you know, that's what punches are for. You know, you got to mask your booze with a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, we had to have a couple people get a ride home. It snuck up on them. The punch snuck up and punched them in the nose.
Yes, well, that's not. We know that's not where the name comes from, but that's a fair explanation. Well, so this was sort of this idea of we know what a punch is at this time period. You know, mid 1800s. Now we want to find a way to make a punch in a single serving for you. So that's that little bit. It doesn't seem that revolutionary, doesn't seem that big of a deal, but it was. It was a big deal. And it was a big enough deal that it felt worth preserving. You know, the reason that I can quote to you the recipe that Santini made was because the very important alcohol historian and barman, Jerry Thomas, you know, really the guy that started writing stuff down, really changed the way we talk about recipes as far as bartending goes. He chose to include the Cresta in his 1862 Bartender's Guide, How to Mix Drinks. So this is that first time you get it written down and recorded. I like that, you know, that there you get the sort of garnish instructions with it that include, you know, like rub the edge of a wine glass with a lemon wedge, dip the glass in pulverized white sugar, pour the ingredients into it, strain, and then garnish with a large lemon peel, and then smile. Part of the instructions. Make sure to smile when you serve it.
That's right. It's always a smile makes the people think you're up to something.
This is part of the presentation. A lot of the modern recipes for the Brandy Cresta will include maraschino liqueur, which does come about not long after it gets published by Jerry Thomas. It becomes more common to put a small pour of maraschino liqueur in that. And that's just more of like as maraschino liqueur, which we talked about, became popular around this time period. You kind of found a way to sneak it into lots of things, one of which was the Cresta. So nowadays, if you order a Cresta in a bar that knows how to make one, you're probably going to get some maraschino liqueur in there. It's just more common.
Yeah, it's kind of strange that it says that the cocktail kind of disappeared for a long period of time, and then it was brought back kind of in the bartending, you know, resurgence that took place. And they said now, particularly in New Orleans, that it's as popular as the Sazerac and the Ramos Gin Fizz and some other well-known New Orleans drinks. But it had kind of disappeared from menus for quite a while.
Well, and I'd argue that it really didn't disappear. It transformed. And that's where we get to the sidecar. So you have this concept of the Cresta, this idea of introducing citrus to your drink. And really, as we move forward, we see sours develop. We see daisies develop. The establishment of the sidecar happens. The first time it's in print is 1922. It's in Harry McElhorn's Harry's ABCs of Mixing Cocktails. He claims that this drink was invented first, and his story changed a few times, was at Buck's Bar in London by this bartender, Pat McGarry. You know, the story was there was somebody who was driving a sidecar, which is the motorcycle that has a little sidecar on it, driving a bike like this and ordered a drink, and they named it after him. But we still, around this time period, people were still drinking Cresta. So you can kind of say like it just was an evolution of the Cresta influenced by this increasing style of drinks on the lighter, the sour, shaken side of things. Now, there is another origin story, which is, you know, sort of conflicting, that comes to us a few decades later. This is David Enbery's The Fine Art of Mixing Drinks. This is 1948. And he says it's an American army captain who was in Paris during World War I who ordered it at Harry's New York Bar. So Harry's New York Bar in Paris, just to clarify, named the drink once again for the sidecar on his motorcycle. He wanted some plain cognac to keep him warm on his ride. The bartender thought it was too early to drink straight cognac, so he cut it with some Livin' and Cointreau and then named it after his bike. So similar understandings to the story, but a few, like 20 years apart as to who made it first.
Well, I thought it was interesting, though, that Harry McElhone, that wrote the Harry's ABC of Mixing Cocktails, he promoted this story about that Pat McGarry, and then, you know, this is a guy that invented it, and then later on he cites himself as being the creator of it. In a book that he wrote like 20 years after that, he decided, hey, I'm the one that invented it. So, you know, how do you do that?
Well, and the interesting thing is, I mean, when you look at the recipes that were actually recorded for these two conflicting stories, that really, in terms of what a drink is or isn't, they're completely different drinks. I mean, because McElhorn's recipe was equal parts cognac, lemon, and Cointreau, and Embry's recipe looks far more familiar to the modern day sidecar, being like 2-1-1, so two parts cognac, one part lemon, one part Cointreau. You know, even to confuse things more, the sugar rim, not included in either of these, though it was included in the Cresta, and then it's put in print in 1934. So between these two recipes. In this book, Complex Cocktail and Drinking Recipes, as an element of the sidecar. If this all seems like confusing and weird, I think it's better, again, to default to the understanding that, look, we knew what a Cresta was. We had this idea of cognac, lemon, orange, a few other things, shaken or stirred. It's really just naturally this idea would have developed into something akin to a sidecar. All of these things could have happened independently of themselves. And the name being the only thing that really unites them. But even that can get further confused by the idea that in bar lingo, a sidecar means its own thing. So when you pour a drink a little too heavy, you pour out that little bit of extra cocktail into a separate glass that has long been referred to as a sidecar.
Yeah, that's your little extra bonus that you get.
Yeah, you're like, you know, you free poured your drink, you poured an extra half ounce of everything by mistake, so you get two extra ounces in your shaker, you just pour it off to the side. That's your sidecar, you drink that later. So it's a term that could come from the popularity of this motorcycle in World War I. It could have predated that, it could have come from just bar terminology.
Yeah, if you had your glass sitting there with your drink, and the bartender poured that little shot glass full of the one that sat next to it, somebody would probably look at that and say, hey, it looks like your drink's got a sidecar.
Yeah, well, that could be where it comes from. And it could be from lots of origin points. And the core concept, I mean, another thing that factors into this, you know, I mentioned Prohibition. Prohibition really was the time period that sour-styled, shaken drinks that have more fruit juice, have more dilution, have more aeration, become really popular because in America, we're working with some rot gut booze. So we don't want a straight spirit slightly modified and stirred because those straight spirits aren't good anymore. We're working with bathtub gin. We're working with whatever we can get. We want to dilute it, to modify it as much as possible so it's palatable. So that the sidecar was this more cognac-heavy drink inspired by the Cresta, or it was just a Cresta, and then through the lens of Prohibition, it gets a little bit heavier on the citrus, a little bit heavier on the sweeteners, and a little bit less on the spirit, makes sense because that's just the movement of drinks in that period. That's just how we were pushing drinks to be made, because that was what Prohibition did.
Bathtub gin and toilet wine.
You gotta, maybe you want to shake that. You don't want that stirred. You don't want that too focused. You want to aerate that a little bit. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, you know, all that is to say, do we have a consensus on where the Brandy Crusta morphed into the sidecar? Not exactly, but it kind of makes sense that it would happen for a variety of reasons.
Well, yeah, I can see somebody not having exactly what they wanted, and they, you know, made it with what they had, and hey, that's pretty good. I might like that better than a Brandy Crusta.
Yeah, well, this punch is going from, you know, the separation of there is spirits slightly modified, and then there are punches that have like citrus and fruit juice and all this, and then these two sides sort of opening up to a broad category of individual cocktails all happens during this time period too. So that is a driving force as well.
Well, it's funny, when we decided to do this episode about the sidecar, I hadn't really paid any attention, but when we were going to do the orange liqueur episode, I wondered why I had like three different bottles of triple sec. And I thought, why do we have all this triple sec? Well, what I didn't know is Mom had gotten into your coasters that you made and found the sidecar in there on one of your coasters. And so she started making up sidecars and drinking them and decided she really likes those. So that's why we had all the triple sec, so she could make her sidecars.
Yeah, sidecar is great. And I like, you know, I feel like a sidecar is, if you want to get into the question of sugar rim or not, and I know it's very common, especially for sort of pretentious drinkers and definitely for pretentious bartenders to frown on a sugar rim. But I like a sidecar because I think it's dependent on the sugar rim. I think even if you make it proper, if you make it with good cognac, the appropriate amount of lemon juice, and a good, like, it is traditionally with Cointreau. So as we talked about last week, that's a triple sec. That's the drier, like, thinner style of orange liqueur.
Mm-hmm.
You need a little bit of extra sugar. And that sugar rim does finish that off. You get that little lick of sugar on the rim of your glass, and it does round it out. Or else it is, if you make a sidecar to proportion and drink it without the sugar rim, I think it's too dry. I don't find it enjoyable. And I don't really love sweet, sweet drinks, but I think it's just correct.
There's also some interesting drink sugars you can get, not just your sugar from your 5-pound bag that you buy at the store. There's, you know, some ones that are drink sugars that you're made, come in something just like your margarita salt and stuff like that are different kinds of sugars that really make an interesting drink too, that you can put on there.
That's true. Well, I don't think, you know, I get that there's that sort of, like, I don't know, turning up your nose, like, oh, a sugar rim. Like, oh, that's just something that, like, I don't know. I guess we think of it like associated with like a lemon drop, which I would also argue makes sense on a lemon drop. But like, there's not that much of a difference between having the sugar on your rim or putting an infused simple syrup in your drink. One is not better than the other. It's just a different way of drinking. So in the case of the sidecar, I feel like it's correct to have the sugar there.
I will never balk at a sugar rim.
And then, you know, I think whether if you like your drinks a little bit more stirred and serious, I think that the Crusta, the Brandy Crusta, is a little bit more for you. But that, you know, that sugar rim, it's once again, you know, old school, old fashions, which were made with the sugar cube that you would pound down in the bottom with the bitters, would get that slurry of sugar in the bottom that you would eat out at the end. So there was a little bit of that crunchy liquid sugar. So it's still an element of the drink. And that the Brandy Crusta might put that on the outside, but it's still an element of the drink. So you can try it out. If you like it old-fashioned, you might like a Crusta.
I used to like to do that with my cereal back in the day when I used to have cereal for breakfast, put a lot of sugar on it, and then when you finish eating all the cereal, you have that milk with, like, milky sugar in the bottom of the bowl and just eat out a few scoops of milky sugar.
Yeah, just crunchy sugar milk.
Yeah. Yeah. What did Justin used to call it? Yum juice.
Oh, yum cream.
Yum cream. Yeah, that's right. That's why they had a 50-pound cat, though.
Yeah, that cat
they gave the cat
cream.
Cats like yum cream.
Yeah. Well, you know, a healthy cat.
Let this be a public health warning. Do not feed your cat yum cream.
Made the cat happy. But all right. Well, there you go. Dad, do you have any other questions or comments about Crustas or sidecars? Are you okay with the term Crusta now? Or are you still turned off?
No. I think we need to start a campaign to rename that And hell, we'll just do like that Macklehorn guy, and we'll just say that we created it. I mean, he decided he was creator, so we'll just publish something and say we're the creator. It's a brandy crown. Yeah.
It's the brandy Corona. Oh, wait, no.
Why not? You never know. Get a drink named after you.
Well, all right. Well, if you're if either of these drinks sound enticing to you, you should check out. Well, our videos are now our Patreon exclusives, but we will definitely be making some Crestas and some sidecars over on our video in coming weeks. So if that interests you, for just $1 a month, you can check that out.
It interests me. I can't wait to make them. Now I see why we have all that triple sec. I'm gonna follow in on that. I gotta get me some good sugar to go with my rim.
Yeah, you could do an infused sugar. I think that's fine. You know, I mean, I also you can a very easy like just if you want to do a sugar rim, but you want to elevate it for whatever reason, you can just grate some of your citrus peel of choice into the sugar, like a little bit of lime zest or lemon zest into your mm-hmm. sugar. Will give you that little bit of like citrus oil along with the sugar, and I like that. And it's also simple. It's there's no prep needed, and it gives you a little bit more. Especially if a drink like a sidecar, I do think benefits from a little bit of that lemon oil on top of it. So it's a good.
It sounds good.
If a sugar rim doesn't feel fancy enough for you, just grate some peel into it. There you go. We've talked a lot about. Garnishes this episode and just you know, to prepare you all for next week, we had somebody, one of our Patreons, write in and ask us specifically about garnishes.
Yeah, so why not, let's find out about garnishes.
Yeah, so just I like to let you all know what's coming. We'll be back next week to talk all about some of the curious history on garnishes, some of the more prominent weird stories around garnishes you may recognize, why we use them. What's the point? Is it just for looks? It's not. Spoiler alert. And why we do what we do. So if that interests you, come back next week. We'll be talking all about that.
Yeah, and it's a garnish, not a garnishment. So you don't have to worry about trying to get out of it.
What?
It's a garnish, not a garnishment.
What does that mean? Is that like a law thing? Is that like a legal thing?
Yeah, that's a legal. That's where
garnish
they,
your wages.
Yeah, there you go. That's okay. What that is. It's a garnishment.
Okay.
Not a garnishment. Not like a
like
lifesaver.
Mint garnish.
Yeah, mint garnish.
Somewhere in there, there's a cool, like, legal cocktail that you could make and garnish it with mint and call it garnishment or something.
Garnishment garnish.
I don't know. All right. All right. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I always learn something. Once again.
Yeah. And thank you all for joining us. I hope you learned something as well. I hope you enjoyed this. If you did and you want to help us out, you want to support us, you can do that on our Patreon. Like I said, you get videos as well, so check that out. If you want to find us on our socials, you want to ask us questions or whatever, you can do that on Neat Boozcast on Twitter and Instagram. You can also email us at neatboozcast@gmail.com. And if you want to talk about how you feel about the term Cresta, you can do that.
Yeah, Meet the Boozcast group page on Facebook.
There, go there. All right. Well, I've been Tanner Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Right then on the last one there. We had a good conversation going on about it and people bringing it to the attention of other people. Look at this. This is what we were talking about.
Thanks.
Yeah, I love to see that kind of interaction as a result of our podcast.
That makes me really happy. Somebody was posting some cool pictures on Twitter too. We got to share all that.
Yeah.